Welcome everybody to another episode of Kev's Perspective. I'm your host, Kev Lowe. And today, man, I really had a good time talking about the financial industry and talking about how my buddy here, Aiken, is a financial advisor for a partnership, his own partnership downtown Minneapolis. And again, really, really cool guy, really smart. We spoke on, you know, how money is everywhere in an artist's life cycle and how to stay relevant and where to invest in the long-term investments to stay relevant, to stay buoyant, if you will, in your career. And again, please bear with some of the technical difficulties. It was my first in-person guest during quarantine, so I had to do the social distancing. I had to, you know, set up the microphones in a way that would work, and new equipment. You never know how it's gonna go. So again, please just enjoy the episode. A lot of gems being dropped here. And again, keep tuning in. Cheers. Welcome everybody to another episode of Kev's Perspective. I'm your host, Kev Lowe, and today I got a really dope guest. Today we're doing our first in-person quarantine edition podcast with my boy Aiken. Aiken, how we doing, man?
Hey, you know, we're doing great. Excited to be here with my guy Kev. We've been plotting on these podcasting moments for a while now, and you've put it to fruition. So I'm excited to hop on, shed some knowledge, and keep following along with you in the good vibes and music behind the scenes you're putting out.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it. And I'm glad we got to do this because I know before we were talking about doing a podcast, and we were actually like going to do it with a couple other guys. And we met about it a lot. And then I had to pull out because that's when CLM was really starting to pop. You know what I mean? That's when like I got invited to do CLM and like all these other things. And like I had to like stop with the idea of podcasting. And then quarantine comes around. And I was like, well, I got a camera, you know, I got my microphone. So I figured it'd be a good time to do it. And I wanted to have Aiken on because, so people who listen to my podcast know that I have, I talk about a couple things. So like I do like some solo conversations, and I do some like out of the box music conversations with artists. And then I also do conversations with, like, I just had a gamer on from the Call of Duty League. I've had, you know, I think the last one that was kind of abstract was, I'm trying to think, I have so many guests on, but like people who own businesses and like in the music industry and people who own businesses in different industries that can relate. So I wanted to have you on because I know that me and Aiken met in WSU, and he got his degree in financing, right? Any major or minor, I mean?
Yeah, my minor was accounting. So okay. Finance, accounting, a lot of it overlaps.
Yeah, right.
Really just understanding the business and the laws of money, you know?
Yeah. And then now you are working for Northwestern Mutual.
Nope. So I started with Northwestern Mutual. After I graduated college, I flipped to a firm that's a fiduciary.
Okay.
So became a partner there, and that firm is the M&E Catalyst Group. So,
you're a partner there?
Correct, yeah.
Right off the gate, became a partner.
Yeah. So I, in a humble way, I had a lot of success when I was at Northwestern Mutual.
Yeah.
And pretty much wanted to figure out a better fit. Their focus is more on insurance sales and not as much comprehensive advice and making sure you're acting in the client's best interest. So. Mm-hmm. I looked around at other firms, found one called the M&E Catalyst Group, got an opportunity to be able to buy into that firm and be in partnership with 10 other full-time financial advisors.
That's crazy.
And have made it happen. We were in the same office last year, remember, in Fifth Street Tower.
Yeah.
That's where our office is now still. And really, we've been working there the whole time during this pandemic. So it's kind of been weird. You know, the building's a ghost town now, and downtown's a ghost town. So.
And those who like don't know what the Fifth Street Towers is, listening, Fifth Street Towers are very, very, it's a very big business building in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hundreds and hundreds upon businesses are in there. I worked in there when I was working for a logistics company, and that's how me and Aiken kind of had meetings in the room he's talking about. And then I was going to move. I had a couple opportunities. I had an opportunity with a company called Epicor. Was a software company because I worked in that realm as well. I've worked in software. I've worked in logistics. I've worked in a ton of different stuff, right? And then when I was in that building, Epicor interviewed me, which was like maybe an office or two below you guys. So like what they're really close. And when I got the opportunity, I actually denied it after applying, which is weird. But I did that because that's when I was like, at the same time, I had to juggle this, I thought, right? I was like, I either quit the career that I'm starting to like excel in, right? And start to like, I would become an account executive, not just be the lower end of sales. Or I could go and like, you know how you chose to be a partner, be a better fit In this company, I'm almost a partner, as in for CLM, I'm like operations manager. So I run a lot, if not at least half of what we do when we're operating. So I was like, that's a better fit. So I'm glad that, again, you found that fit that I did, because that can be difficult for those who don't know. Coming out of college, you want to like just find something really quick, and that kind of just gets you going. But you, after that point of finding a job and you have the security, because we didn't, you know, kids nowadays, think about this. Think about the security we had coming out, which is pretty solid. It wasn't the best market because we're coming off a recession, but it was pretty good. That was 2018, right?
Yeah.
Now, imagine trying to find a job.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to create that entrepreneurial spirit or find that role, but I'm 100% there with you. I mean, you got to be great at your interview skills over Zoom, because you're not getting to use those people skills in person or those charisma that normally you can display, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, and the thing is, if you know communication, 80% of communication is displayed in person. 80% is nonverbal communication. Even through Zoom, you're not going to be able to see that. You know what I mean? Like, even through Zoom, like, it's tough to display your body, and like, it's tough. You're only seeing the top half. You don't even know if they're wearing pants or not in the interview, which I've heard is like an uncommon thing to do. So anyway, it's just like, during this time, I feel for the kids coming out of school now compared to when we came out of school, because we got a job, we got security, and it's easier to work through that. I understand some kids were even furloughed during this time. But now I'm just like grateful to be where I'm at. And like, imagine if you didn't have the opportunity to even move companies, because companies now, if you know, because since you're a partner, big head of your firm, right, they're not hiring and they don't want to hire. And, you know, it could be contrast, right? Like, they figured out COVID operations, so now they're trying to hire. Mm-hmm. It just depends. But in certain industries like music, they're saving every penny they can. I don't know if it's the same in finance.
In finance, there's kind of ebbs and flows. So we are still bringing on advisors, or that we're still hiring staff members, just because our roles have actually increased during this time.
Oh, wow.
With more so companies, because they're downsizing their staff, they're delegating more stuff to us. So whether that's filling out different paperwork or acting as a liaison with their different professional relationships, I mean, we're still staying busy, but I'm 100% there with you. I mean, I know on the music side, without them touring and having those revenue streams coming in, I mean, they're, like you said, they're not hiring right now at all.
No. Oh, sorry about that. Spike, folks. That was not good. I was trying to adjust the levels as we're talking, which is sometimes not the best idea. But yeah, no, I agree. So moving forward from Aiken, right, for how we know Aiken, I wanted to ask you a couple of things before we kind of get into the industries is, why finance? Because I was an accounting major in school, and then I dropped that quick as fuck. I hated accounting. I did a really good job. The numbers weren't the problem. The problem was the passion for it wasn't there. And I'm very people oriented. Why finance for you?
Yeah. So financial planning or advisory, a lot of it is that mix of numbers and the people relationships. Yep. So, I mean, I'm pretty much interacting with my clients or on the phone with them half the time, and then running numbers and doing analysis the other half the time. So it allows me to utilize that math mind that I've had since I was a little boy, but also be able to utilize those social skills and get a lot of fulfillment from helping people along the way. So really our role is the ones to understand all the shortcuts, understand all the loopholes. So if people want to pay less in taxes, we can make that happen. I mean, if people are all for paying a lot in taxes, well, then we won't take advantage of those loopholes. Right, right. But pretty much why finance, a lot of it came down to just being a numbers guy my whole life. And then my mom passed away when I was 3, and we didn't have a very good financial plan in place. So just seeing my dad go through some issues there, it built up a strong why pretty easily, because if I can solve those problems to not have other people in those situations, I mean, you wake up happy and excited to go to work every day, and that's really what life's about, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's actually a super good why. And I actually wanted to, a lot of things I learned in school was from a big wake up moment, at least for me in school, was learning something about the golden circle. And you know about that, I think. It's funny enough, because we have a professor in Winona that didn't know about it. He was kind of like touching on it without knowing it. And I was like, you're talking about this guy named Simon Sinek. And he's like, what do you mean? And I showed him the Golden Circle. And the Golden Circle is super cool. People, if you don't know the Golden Circle, look it up. It's discovering your why. And that's why certain companies do so well. So if you as a personal brand or entity can discover your why, like Aiken just found his. And for me, my why in music was everyone in my family was interested, but in music, but in, you know, somehow, shape or form, they played an instrument. My why for the music business industry was I'm very business savvy. I watched a $10,000 business investment grow into $10 million in 10 years. So I was right there watching it, and then watching a business that I had, one failed, the other one made $500,000 in half a year. So it's like my why is I love the process, and I love, literally, I fell in love with just losing. I fell in love with losing, and I fell in love with the wins as well when you get them. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy to find your why. And so one thing I wanted to know too is how much freedom do you have within your current company? And I had it related to Northwestern, so my apologies. But with your firm, obviously you have a lot of freedom than if you're a partner. Because if, again, those who don't know about finance or even being a lawyer, if you're a partner of your company, usually you're top dog, right? You have a lot of control in that company. Is that goes the same for finance?
Yeah, so I'm the minority partner, just being based on age right now.
Yep.
But I am one of 10 partners, so I mean, I do run my own calendar. No one really gives me any pushback on what days I work, when I want to work. As long as I'm fulfilling my clients' needs, we're all good, pretty right. much. So independence-wise, I love it, just because I've always been a very independent person. I don't like necessarily like getting bossed around or someone else looking over my shoulder all the time. So that side on the freedom is awesome. The downside of it is there is a lot of regulations in finance. So the downside is you're doing a lot of paperwork.
I bet.
But I mean, that's just part of the game. Sooner rather than later, I'll be delegating that to just another team member so I can even be more efficient, you know?
Yeah. Excuse me. No, absolutely. And that's kind of where you have to start. I mean, even in the company I'm at, with CLM, I got told what to do for the first half a year, I'd say 7 months, which is not that long if you think about it. In any company, because usually with company for at least in sales, it goes, you're at a, we call it a bitch role in sales for a year, doing the shittiest shit, you're doing paperwork, you're doing all the hard stuff. And then you learn later, about a year after they do an assessment on you. And if you move up, you move up. It's, and then at that point, it's every 2-3 years in your role, and it just gets longer and longer. Your 5-year plan in sales is like, hopefully you're at that point, you're making 6 figures in 5 years, which some people think that's not a long time. Some people think it is. I don't think it's that long. I think you just got to work your ass off for that. With music, it was 7 months of hard work and paperwork and the shitty stuff of, I took tickets at the door. That's how I started. I took tickets at the door. I went, thanks for coming, like a movie guy. And then after that, now I'm actually like, you know, it basically conducting is what I call it. Conducting the show and the experience. And my boss does the high-end paperwork, which is the stuff that I'm trying to learn now. Shadowing that, which those negotiations are difficult to being at the top. And then after that, you kind of learn how that gets to you, trickles down to me, and then it trickles down to my DJ after that with the reasoning why we execute the way we do. So I think it's a good thing for you to be in that part. Minority partner doesn't mean anything less other than you're absorbing as much as you can. Until everything is on your shoulders. You know what I mean? That's kind of the
exactly, the
freedom there. So let's get into this. Finally get into the industry. So how you were telling me how your industry is now kind of relating to music. Please explain, because when people think music, they don't think finance.
Yeah. So our firm is fairly unique, and we're really one of 8 firms in the country that do work the way we do. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it's led me into the professional athlete and also the big time music realm. So with that, what our role in that is more so as a financial advice or guidance or like that personal financial officer for artists or managers. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. Those are people that take a lot more time just because they're fully entrepreneurs, kind of like the CLM team.
Right.
But what that's looking like is a lot of these labels, as I've found out, they don't necessarily provide the management team for the artists. They're more so about, hey, we want to have your music produce as much revenue as possible. What you do with that revenue on your distribution or the money you get is up to you. We don't care. So what my role is we'll give that financial guidance to the artist. We'll help them set it up so that they don't have to tour forever, so that they don't have to just continue to kind of go through that rock star lifestyle of, hey, if I'm not making money, I'm not going to be good anymore. So what we try to do is set up them with income streams, build out their businesses or their brands, help them facilitate maybe getting more marketing dollars, help them facilitate maybe paying less in taxes on those dollars. And at the same time, just being that person that they can call. So anytime they got to get something done, we'll get it done. Whether that's, hey, I'm going to go buy a brand new sports car, I need a loan on it, get the loan set up. So then I'll be on the phone with different bankers, pretty much facilitating, hey, which rates are you offering? Okay, this rate is better than this one. We're going to go with this opportunity.
Yeah.
But it also goes into just being on that management team. You know, I mean, successful entrepreneurs, they understand that you got to have a team because you can't do everything on your own. Mm-hmm. So really my role is just being on that team in partnership with their manager, in partnership with their booking agent, in partnership with the record label, so that we're helping them pretty much just progress to whatever they want to do, whether that's, hey, they want to be in music forever, like that's the only lifestyle they ever want, right, or, hey, I only want to be in music for 5 to 10 years, and then I want to get off and create other brands. You know, some people, Jay-Z, for example, with Roc Nation, I mean, his brand is so diversified now, where he's got a sports agency, he's got his music brand still, he's got real estate ventures, he's got marketing companies. I mean, a lot of young artists don't think like that. So we just try to help them understand the full picture so that we can get them on the path to facilitate having a brand like that. Because Jay didn't do it overnight. And really, we can't do it overnight for him either. But it's just getting that ball rolling so that they're on that path, so that they're in a situation where they're not going to have to tour forever. Because to shed some light on these record deals, really what that looks like is when an artist gets that deal up front, a lot of people don't realize this, but that's really just a front. So it's pretty much the record label is loaning you money and you're not going to get any more revenue from your music until you recoup that money.
Right. Talk to the people for a minute. This dog's going nuts.
Yeah. So for example, say, oh, they signed a $4 million record deal. What that means is the artist is fronting the label is fronting the artist $4 million up front, and now the artist isn't going to get paid until their music recoups $4 million. And then once they recoup that $4 million through Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal streams, YouTube streams, TikTok streams, or touring revenue or album sales, once they recoup it, they're only going to get a small percentage of that revenue. So for example, I can't disclose names for confidentiality or anything, but most splits are situations where the artist will only get 20% of the revenue once they've recouped that amount.
Right.
And the label will get 40%, or their management company will get the other 40%. So in all reality, yeah, the label and the management company are helping this artist a ton. They're helping them build out their brand, but they're receiving 80% of the revenue that this artist has from their natural talent or their talent to get the people really attracted to them, you know? So it's really just making sure that that money they get up front and then those revenue streams they get are just maximized so that it's not a reoccurring cycle of, I've got to put out an album every year, I'm not going to be able to feed my family.
Right.
Just because their lifestyle is so expensive. And you would know on this with touring right now with CLM, there is no touring.
No.
And that's a huge revenue stream for these artists.
Right.
Like one of their biggest revenue splits is through touring, through their ability to sell out shows. So, I mean, we were going through situations. There was a business stimulus package loan called the PPP, it's Paycheck Protection Program. And we had artists that we were recommending them apply for that. We ended up not applying for that in some situations just because of the publicity that could have came from it. Like big name artists received government dollars for bailout, even though they just signed a $1 million record deal.
Yeah.
But pretty much, I mean, the program was set up for businesses that were affected by COVID, artists being businesses, so it would allow them to receive a couple hundred thousand dollars, depending on their tax return, in government aid, which is fully legal because they weren't touring, they weren't bringing on revenue.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really just trying to make sure that we're continuing to evolve, like you guys have seen with the Tory Lanez, what was it called? But the happy hour or that dance hour he had on Instagram Live.
I didn't see it.
Oh, well, Tory Lanez, like right when COVID hit, he started just doing these like DJ hours, and he was getting a ton of people on his live streams. He was having people shake ass, do all that the people going. But pretty much it built up his brand, and he doubled his following because of that. And then obviously the incident with Megan Thee Stallion happened. So
yeah, the whole Tory and everything. The whole gun thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, no, I knew he was on live for a long time until now, which that's actually a fun conversation too, is that artists have been doing live a lot more. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because it's a way to stay connected with your fans in a tough time. Mm-hmm. And you got to be careful because it's publicity, right? It's anything... You get okay, so I mean, like, to get off the topic a little bit, like, being an artist, you're a business, like you said. That's a big point to mention, and you mentioned a lot of good stuff. But the one thing I want to mention too is being a business, then you have to carry yourself like a business. A lot of artists don't do that. Mm-hmm. And that's to watch your personal PR. That's to ensure that, again, that you're not fucking around. Let's just be honest. You're just not fucking around, right? Tory Lanez did some fucking around. And the world sees you in that light and fans see you personally, but then also that affects your business because then now anyone in your camp, you may lose people in your camp from that. Like, I guarantee you people left his company after that incident. You never know. You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly.
Just because, again, like, shit, man. You really got to think about what you're doing to the people. You got to think about your fans when you do stuff like that. And that's, like you said, with touring, you got to think about your fans. That's gone. That's a personal experience that you're losing. Mm-hmm. Like in business, I think about user experience, okay? And some people, when they tour, I've worked with a variety of artists. I think I have 36 different artists under my belt now. All of them do their shows differently. Not a single show has gone the same way. Some bring a ton of equipment for load-in. Some just bring a DJ in themselves. You know, some people just bring a light or two or a fog machine. Like, that user experience is what's going to keep your fans there for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another thing to finance, is that, you know, the long term, that's what you're there for. Your game is not short term. If the short term game is whatever the revenue stream is. So like at one show, think about the amount of revenue streams that you can manage. Okay. You got the ticket sales, you got VIP, you have soft merch, you have hard merch. And then on top of that, you have deposits just for being there, for showing up. Then you have to pay the manager. Then you have to pay the venue. Then after that, you have to pay the promoter.
Mm-hmm.
That's one show. That's eight things that I could think of. Sorry, door sale cash as well. Not tickets, but door sale. Not because tickets is pre-advance and then door sale and the VIP is within that ticket. But then also there are more than just, I've seen that shows where they have general admission, VIP, and then they have like bottle service. Mm-hmm. That adds a whole nother revenue aspect. So there's a lot of things that you could manage being a financial advisor for an artist, as long as they're consistent with their brand. I know that my boss works with Riff Raff right now, and he personally just manages two things: marketing and merchandise. And at a show, that's a lot to manage by itself. Mm-hmm. If you have good merch game. And that's what I think a lot of people now are realizing during quarantine without touring, is that merch has never been more important. Your music streams, you're not going to make you just money off your music streams, okay? Unless you're DaBaby making platinum record after platinum record.
Yeah,
that's just not how it works. Like, streaming is actually the lowest form of income for an artist.
Yeah.
Merchandise can outweigh that a lot of the time.
Oh, 100%. And we've seen that kind of be transformed with Travis Scott.
Yep.
Off his last album and now this partnership with McDonald's, with Cactus Jack. But his last album went platinum because he released merch in collaboration with his album. So it just incentivizes people, hey, this is different. You know, I'm not only getting the picture frame with the album going up on my wall, but I'm also getting the merchandise to go with it so that I can get that clout with my friends or just hold on to it, because I know some people are buying Travis Scott's apparel right now as an investment because it was limited.
Yeah.
And they're planning on just selling it on eBay down the road. So I mean, with that, like you said, there's a lot of different revenue streams, but it's making sure that they're maximizing those, because what we always got to understand is what the incentive for the other people is. So if someone's not working for the artist directly, if they're just working for the label, they're incentivized by what makes the label money.
Yep.
Some of these streams don't make the label money. So merch, for example, that might not be influenced by the label depending on the contract for the artist. That could be more so just through their business manager or their production company.
Yeah.
Another item would be like their publishing. So
yep.
Publishing is long money. So talking on patience, publishing is that long money. So when you hear these songs that are chopped up, so for example,
It's really easy to think of publishing, dude. So, for example, anything, any soundtrack you hear and anything on Netflix, that's a placement for publishing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, I'm very familiar with publishing. And, like, literally publishing is Travis Scott's in a commercial with McDonald's using that song, even Snapped Up. That's publishing.
Correct. So that's where a lot of these artists, they're selling their publishing. It's the same way they're selling their royalties through the label. And it's probably not in their best interest, because then they're just not capping. They're capping their revenue that they're going to receive from their publishing down the road. So pretty much they're splitting that with somebody else. And that's another person. They may be there to help them out. But just based on business, you're always better off paying for a fee directly rather than allowing someone to receive a percentage of revenue. Because when they receive that percentage of revenue, there's no cap. Whereas if you're just paying for a fee and paying for someone's hourly time, you're still going to receive the majority of that revenue. You're not going to be capped by someone else saying, hey, I get 50% of this forever.
Yeah, no, big facts. And that's one thing too, is like, if you think about the amount of, I wanted to bring about this in the podcast, because finance and music very much coincide with the same thing. If you want to be, like you said, long-term successful, like how you brought up Jay, because a lot of people, like Dr. Dre, for example, people didn't even realize what Jay-Z was doing with business. Okay. Dre was the more shining example. Once Beats by Dre came out, that's the year when most people in our generation realized that music isn't just music, it's a business. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, actually they can make other things, they can do other things. Well, yeah, what else are you gonna do with millions of dollars? If I had millions of dollars, bro, I'd be investing hard. I'd be making new companies. Like, for example, Futuristic, I don't know if you heard of that rap artist, but he just made a company where he made a service platform, okay? Because I'm sure you know this, but in the United States, 80% of our revenue is service. It's not products. We outsource products. China's got it, India's got it, you know what I mean? Other place got it. We're not product-based business. So if you're in the US, here's a little tip, be a service-based business. But with that, the amount of services that Futuristic is providing is that you can go on one website to get a feature from an artist. You can go on one website to, which is, again, just that by itself, just features. Think about that. It used to be all traditional via email, and now it's going to be a click of a button. What do you want? You want a verse? You want a hook? What do you want? That's going to be another revenue stream to manage if you're that artist, if you're expanding yourself into that. So, like, I remember the company I was previously working for, the Miles Graves company, he taught me a lot, Miles did, about the each step of the process where money's involved, from the beginning to the end. Okay, when you're recording, there's something called a split sheet that you have to sign for royalties. Mm-hmm. And that is finance. When you get past the recording part, then there's costs involved with the mixing, the mastering. Okay, there's costs into that, which finance could manage. Okay. Then after that, you go, okay, well, because even the recording conversation is, do you want to outsource it or do you want to do it in-house? That's a conversation to have that, you know, maybe you could get into with artists, like, hey man, for the long term, is it going to be smarter for you to keep outsourcing this? And what's the cost per month with that? Or would you rather just save that money and let's put it into your own studio? Mm-hmm. Maybe have a personal engineer to work with. Okay. Then after you get done with that, distribution, what's the cost of distributing and what platform are you on? Mm-hmm. Okay. After distribution, that's another thing to put in finances. That's where the royalty aspects comes in from the first part of what you just did. If we're all following, that's four steps already that we're going through. The fifth step would be publishing after you distribute it. And marketing is even in between the distribution and publishing, because there's nothing to publish if you don't market it well. Exactly. And then even a lot of people make publishing songs purely for the publishing aspect. Like, people will get a publishing inquiry saying, here's $10,000 if you make me this specific type of beat is what a company will ask you for. Boom, that's another way of making money, another thing to manage. Then after all of that publishing and everything we get through at the very end, it's placements of where is it going to go? What, that's another conversation about money. So it's so crazy the amount of complexity there is behind your favorite tracks that all includes finance.
Oh, no doubt. And so how some of these tracks blow up as well. I mean, you'll have some artists that most artists got to have a song or two blow up before a label will sign them. And what the most ingenious thing these artists can do with that is keep the masters for those tracks that blew up and not have those be signed off to the label, so they're splitting revenue on them forever. I work with an artist that did that, and they blew up in like 2016. So pretty much their music, three or four of their songs, they still have the majority of the revenue for, and these are the songs that they're getting the most listens to. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to split that revenue with the label. And that's right to them, where normally they're getting a 30% revenue split after their production company and the label takes their splits out of that.
Right.
So, I mean, just moves like that will come back to pay millions over the lifetime of their music career.
Yep.
But, I mean, what have you seen, Kev, with touring, and how do you expect that to change with fans being at venues? I know we saw Chainsmokers, they tried to have that drive-in venue.
Yeah.
What was that, a couple months ago? And it kind of just went
wrong
entirely.
Yeah. So, you know what's hilarious is that before I get into like the speculation, my buddy Miles, back to the conversation, he told me right as COVID hit, and this was in February, he goes, Kevin, I guarantee you people are going to be doing the old drive-in classics. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, people are going to do drive-ins. I said, BS, like a drive-in movie. He's like, yeah, like drive-in concerts. And what you can do is you can his idea was broadcasting it through the radio station. You can get one FM transmitter and broadcast it through an empty air station that's paid for by someone else. May not be the best quality, but it can be a concert in your car and you don't even have to roll down your windows to listen to this, right? I think what you're talking about, I've seen as well, where EDM festivals have been, you know, people are supposed to stay in their cars, but people get out of their cars. And then now it's a liability concern and no one's enforcing anything, because in shows, it's super tough regardless to enforce rules on patrons, because the patrons paid and they think they're the boss of you, or they're intoxicated or inebriated to the point where they don't care.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know what you're talking about. What I'm going to speculate is this. Shows are going to change forever. You're not going to be shoulder to shoulder with people anymore for at least a couple more years.
Really?
I don't believe so. I believe we will have, if you want to risk your own health, because if COVID does get a vaccine and these things do happen, what we're going to do, at least is my idea, is section people off. So you have that VIP area in a completely separate area from the show. You have small clusters of tables, kind of like a restaurant. And then if you want to be in that general admission pool of people shoulder to shoulder, by all means. But it's up to your discretion at that point. And it's up to the venue and what they enforce as well. So as a promoter, we are not going to be the ones to enforce rules.
Gotcha.
It's never that way. Promoters don't enforce rules. Our job, we get the artist there. We ensure that everything goes smoothly. My job as operations is I'm over the top. I ensure that the venue's doing their job. I make sure everyone's accountable, which is tough to do. Make sure the lighting guy's accountable. Make sure the sound guy's accountable. The door person, the coat person, the whole entourage that the artist brings, okay? My DJ, the other opening DJ, the opening artists. Like, imagine how many things I have to manage already. It's not my job to be security too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and security is going to be the one managing COVID.
Yeah.
And it's going to be difficult. So I'll be honest, man, I don't know. The only thing I do know is the classic shoulder to shoulder sweatshop show, not going to be as common.
I got you. So the days of people suffocating and having to get lifted out of sound set are over.
I think so. I think for now, festivals even are not going to happen. They're all going to be virtual, because they've seen success with that. And that's actually another interesting topic too, because festivals now have the live recording. So like me and you right now are taking our vocals and going right into a mic raw. There's nothing covering that up. Mm-hmm. Well, before, when you're at a festival, they could have auto-tune pedals, compression pedals, and all these things to make their voice sound just like the radio. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we saw with online festivals, I don't know if you watched it, but there's a couple festivals that big artists were on. And if you're trash live, now you know.
Yeah.
And they sounded like garbage. And those artists lost a lot of fame, got a lot of hate, got a lot of bad marketing, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of defamation happening in the year of 2020, a lot of secrets being revealed. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting, but back to the finance aspect of things, it's actually going to make our finances easier, because without the shoulder to shoulder thing, less liability, less things we have to pay out of pocket for. So we're pretty much knowing a guarantee. And that's another thing. I've talked to artists recently. I'm sending out mass emails with my boss, and we're seeing that now they want a guarantee. They're not touring without guarantees and heavy contracts in place. So if anyone's out there trying to do DIY shows, like do-it-yourself shows, you better talk to your financial advisor to see, A, if that's smart, but then B, also to see the liability behind those things. I'm sure you deal with liability quite a bit.
Oh, no. Risk protection is one of the biggest items. I mean, that's just one of the pillars of your financial plan as well. So on liability, that's why if you ever see LLC behind someone's business, or what that means is limited liability company. So it's really just helping them distribute that liability so that if something were to go wrong where a bunch of people catch COVID at a festival, they can't sue you for everything in your home. They can only take the assets within that business, or only the assets within that business are liable. Yeah, and then also with that, there's just so many numerous insurances that people use to protect that liability. Big one right now is cyber protection.
I bet.
Just there's been a ton of phishing or people trying to scam to get a come up right now. So that's one where, because all these businesses are having to transition to be fully online or be majority online, that's one that really wasn't seen much previously, but now it's a recommendation for pretty much every company we work with, you know. As far as other items on the show is on those guarantees, that guarantee that the artist is expecting, that's the guarantee of what they're going to be compensated for, or how is revenue distributed for artists when they tour normally?
So that's a good question. Basically, the guarantee is what we do, at least, and what most companies do, is you have a guarantee of them showing up and the guarantee of them getting off stage. So you have an overall price of, here's my performance price. And then after that, we give you the guarantee of, let's say the performance price is $10,000, and make numbers simple. Okay. You put $5,000 before in a wire transfer to get them there, and then another $5,000 at the show to get them to perform. And we usually do it after they're done performing. That way we're ensuring that we get the full performance, right? We don't get a 15-minute performance and then boom, we're done. You know what I mean? So that's one aspect of things for a guarantee and deposit. The other things are, okay, well, this is what we've made off of the last 5 or 6 years of touring, and this is the trend that we're seeing. So a lot of it does deal with trends, and that's where negotiations come into play. But to make things less complicated, you got the deposit and guarantee, and then you got the the merchandise, which is also like, okay, what can I expect? 15%, 20%, whatever the percentage is, cool. Then you got a head count. So then you got a head count of tickets coming in. You got a head count of VIP coming in, and then you have to guess, okay, well, this is how many patrons may walk up, which is all of these numbers I'm talking to you about is based off of consumer behavior. Mm-hmm. That's why right now I'm doing a lot of research into consumer behavior. The finance aspect of things is, I'll be honest, a simple equation. And the equation always rounds itself out, fills itself out. But that doesn't mean profiting at our shows are easy. That's one of the most difficult things to do, is having a patron pay money that they don't want to pay. Let's just be honest. If you don't know the industry, you learn something real quick. Aiken, the artists don't want to give money out, and they don't want to invest in the wrong areas because patrons don't want to pay. Mm-hmm. Think about the artists that you've personally invested in. You listen to music, but how many of you actually invested in, bought their CD, bought their streams, because you don't have to do that anymore, bought a piece of merch, bought a CD? You probably haven't.
It's been a while.
Maybe it's been years merch. For me, man. Yeah. I get that stuff free now, but before, it was years. The only artist I've ever been consistent with is a guy from this town named Mod Sun. Yep. And literally, Mod was, I would buy 4 or 5 of his CDs and give them to my friends just because I wanted to support the cause. Mm-hmm. Now I have a clothing sponsor, which people, when you think sponsor, they don't want to pay. Why do you think everyone's trying to be a brand ambassador nowadays, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I pay my sponsor. I pay about 70% off, but I still pay the man, and that's different. You know what I mean? So I just think, it's finances is really interesting in the music industry, because it's all based off of consumer behavior. And if you give them the best customer experience or user experience you can, they will pay, and the artists that will invest. But I guarantee you, I was surprised that you, as a financial advisor, were in the music industry, because it's super, super tough to get them to invest in anything.
Correct. And yeah, that's where, by being more of that personal financial officer and being the liaison, it just helps that trust be created, because we're doing so much for the client. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're getting calls to do everything from making sure they maximize every grant that the government's putting out right now, to making sure they get loans for their house they're buying or the condo they're buying, making sure they got different credit cards set up and their bill pays are appropriate. So it's really all the stuff the average American has to do in order to be successful. Well, these higher ups, because they have that same time the average American spends, which maybe be an hour a day, they would have to spend 4 or 5 hours a day because they have so much going on. Well, they delegate that to our team, and then we do it well. And because we do it well, it just kind of already has such an amount of trust that's created. So that allows us to come up with real estate investment strategies, or come up with other business strategies, and help them understand how they should be paying their employees in those businesses, how they should incentivize employees to, you know, maybe underpay them initially so that they can get that higher level of productivity from them.
Right.
So it's really like that hired chief financial officer, and most artists aren't financially literate. Most Americans aren't financially literate. So, yeah. I mean, really, we do a lot of education as well. So I got to make sure, I apologize to any listeners, if I'm ever speaking in jargon, I try to break it down as easy to understand level as possible. But by reading all the jargon all day and having to decipher that, it just comes up in my own vocabulary from time to time as well.
Yeah, that's same thing being where in my position when I use acronyms a lot. And you know, I'll use with finance, it's a little different because you're talking about specific things. And when you're talking about specific plans that are overall that in your industry, in music, it's pretty easy to understand things like touring or, you know, jargon like that. But then when it comes to like, you know, me using a lot of acronyms and things like that, I don't have heavily explained stuff like that. But it is what it is, man. It's just a part of the industry that you come to be in, and people will figure it out. I mean, education is really big though. It's actually in music is really big because you have to educate people on their royalties and their what they're responsible for and what to look for in negotiations and agreements. But for you too, the same thing. People want to know what you're investing your money in, and just you could take days explaining one plan. You know what I mean? So you have to dumb that down into 3 to 4 sentences maximum for them to invest. And for artists, you see people when they think finance, like, oh, they're investing well because they got money stacks up to their head and they got all these things. That's them poorly handling their money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you know what's funny, dude, is a lot of that money in their hand for big time artists are actually fake money.
Is it
the money they throw out? Oh yeah, dude. There's a whole website that is dedicated to making fake money to make it look as real as possible. When you hold it, it's a crisp dollar bill, but you buy it to throw it in videos and to flex it in Instagram posts. And people, I think that's a horrible perception to be giving, but now it's a standard. If you don't do that, you're not a rapper. Or if you don't do that as like even an alternative artist to show your cards, to show your success, people don't think you're winning.
Yeah.
And it's just like super messed up in my opinion. Because there's a whole market for buying fake money.
Yeah. No, I can hear that for sure. I don't know if any listeners have watched the show Dave, kind of giving light on Lil Dicky's come up and the comical rap that he brings to the table. But like Kev was saying, I mean, rappers have to find that clout or have to display that clout by throwing money or doing these rock star life attributes.
Right.
But a lot of the times, like you were saying, it's really just to keep up with the other rappers out there so that they can maintain and be on that same page. Where a rapper like Nipsey Hussle, for example, he wasn't doing that as much. He was more focused on enlightening people, focused on building people up, focused on helping people understand that the true way to financial security, the true way to financial freedom is by building businesses, by empowering your people, by keeping that business in the family and recirculating the dollar within your own communities. And unfortunately, there were people out there that didn't want him building that brand up, and he's no longer here with us. But rappers like that, and Jay-Z had said this as well, how the reason that his career is still so strong in his early 40s now, I think he's early 40s, right?
Yeah.
Is because he's tailored his audience, or he's tailored his music to his audience as he's gotten older. So when he was in his 20s, he was rapping about stuff that 20-year-olds wanted to listen to, chasing girls, getting fucked up, partying, all that. Where as he gets older, he's rapping about real estate investments. He's rapping about how messed up the royalty game is for labels. He's rapping about raising families and being good dads and like having that community and building your community. And that's where young artists, you know, it's so much of the auto-tune and the party, party, party. And they need to alter that if they want to stay in the limelight. Otherwise, they're just going to be a flash in the pan. Like, for example, what was the...
You don't even remember his name. That is the perfect example.
Exactly.
Is literally stuff like that. But there's a rapper like Lil Xan is one of those examples to me. Lil Pump is one of those examples to me. People who don't have that long-term strategy, right? Like, I think as an artist and in anyone, think about this is what I've learned. You have an overall strategy, whether you be a financial advisor, whether you be a rapper. You have tactics to that strategy, okay? And when it came to Dre, for example, he had an overall strategy, which was to be a successful businessman in the music industry. Mm-hmm. So he made investments in Snoop Dogg, the earliest investment in Snoop Dogg, the most famously known as earliest investment in Eminem. Dre worked with NWA, like, and that's why he is who he is, and that's why he had the success in being a businessman, was literally because of he thought business the entire time. Yeah, there's passion in music. Mm-hmm. You mean, you got to think about that, but you also got to think about your finances and what you're protecting. And hence why you have an umbrella of things, which I talked about in another podcast, but essentially as a brand, you then have an umbrella of things. For me, it's Kevlo, right? That's the brand. I work with CLM, okay? I make music under a different persona for fun. I then work on this podcast, which is another branch of things I work with. So there's a lot, but to wrap it up, because again, I did not realize we've been talking for an hour and 45 minutes. So yeah, so to wrap it up, I have to do that. What's next, man, for financial advising in the music industry or whatever you got going? What's next?
Yeah. So I'm excited for what's next. What's next? I can't shed too much light because of confidentiality, but really it's just continuing to get the foot in this door and then help these people I'm working with maintain that wealth and make sure that wealth gets distributed to their people in the most tax efficient manner so that they're going to keep that wealth forever. The brand is pretty much nationwide now. I'm going to be in Atlanta next weekend.
That's dope.
I'm going to be in Texas in 2 weekends for business as well. So that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur for those people out there listening. You can travel and you can blur your personal expenses into business expenses. So that's the pretty much any vacation you can go on, you can have it be justified as a business trip if you incorporate business into that vacation for some. So it really, it's just continuing to get immersed and more so and build my knowledge more so that I can be even more valuable to these different individuals. Setting up more partnerships. So we're to the point where we have a partnership with different marketing companies, with different legal teams, with different tax professionals, realtors, really across the country so that we can plug our clients in based mm-hmm. on the different geographic areas they're living in. So whether they're in LA or Atlanta or Miami, really we have connections all around the country to be able to get you facilitated to have a condo so that you're not paying $10K a month for an apartment that you're not building any yeah. equity on. So it's really just, you can live a lavish life. You can have a lot of fun. You can live that rock star life if you plan a little bit ahead, but it's just helping them make sure they are planning ahead so that they can build wealth while they're doing that.
Right.
So it's not a reoccurring cycle of the artist I was thinking of was Trinidad James.
Oh, sure.
And the reason I couldn't think of him was because when was the last time he put a song out besides Gold All on My Chain?
Right. That's a perfect you know? Example though.
Yeah.
I feel you. But okay. Well, Matt, yeah, again, be well, be safe for any artist traveling, for finances, doing business during this time. Be well, be safe. And again, I appreciate you being on, man. I think we're going to do another one. I think I'm going to have you back to kind of get an update because, again, I'm going to do a longer segment next time. And I think what we're going to do next time is a lot of things that we didn't talk about in finance, which I had questions on. So we're gonna do a follow-up episode of this and see what the people think. So
definitely
like it, definitely. Share it, go follow Aiken on everything. I'll post the socials right up in this video. And again, hey. Much love for being on, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate everybody. Thanks for listening. Kev's doing some great things here, so keep tuning in.
Thank you, everybody, for all the love you've been showing to Kev's perspective. I hope you guys pick up the gems that are being dropped in these conversations. Please go subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Kev's Perspective. Again, don't forget that comma. Go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review on the very bottom. I'd love to hear your feedback. And for any kind of guests you want to hear on the podcast, go follow me on Instagram. It's at Kev's Perspective Podcast. Again, it's at Kev's Perspective Podcast. Thank you for listening and keep supporting. Cheers.